And unless you live in an area where there are few murders, and so they're taken with that significance, if you live in an area where they're not, this goes on continually, and most people don't even recognize. So whereas you have enough evidence to go in there and to go for, say, murder two, and in our state that's 25 years to life. Now in New York we have the death penalty. Okay? We didn't have that before. So now if they walk in and they say, well, we'll plead to manslaughter one, that carries 8 1/3 to 25 years. That's a big difference. And the reason it's a big difference is because if you're convicted of homicide on murder two, you have to serve 25 years before you're eligible for parole. But if you're convicted, because that life thing at the end, forget it, that's nothing. That doesn't mean anything. And if you're convicted of manslaughter, the next lesser charge of 8 1/3 to 25, you're only serving 1/3 of that sentence in reality. So by the time 7 years comes around, they're eligible for parole. And by the time 7 years comes around, you're just getting there. Because you spent the first 2.5 years dealing with the trial. So now you've got the next year recognizing that this is for real. It's like after the trial is over and you know that nothing's going to bring that child or that person back, then you say to yourself, now how do I deal with this for the rest of my life? And you start to build up your coping skills. And by the time you finally get there, he's eligible for parole again. And now you're back in the system. And now you're sending notes to the parole board saying, I want to be there to make sure he stays in there. Because what happens to survivors of homicide is we see our duty as being having the ability to not let that person kill again. We recognize that we can't turn back the clock, but we don't want to give him the chance either to do that again, him or her. So 7 years comes, we're really getting there, we're rolling, and now you get the letter from the parole board. He's coming up. And you think to yourself, oh, you want to do this, and it pulls you right back. And then 15 years comes along, and you go through the same thing, and it pulls you right back. And this is what happens with homicide. And people don't recognize the impact that it has on families over long periods of time. And so when you hear counselors who say, well, you know, it's really time to get on with your life. Well, we'd love to. But it just seems like there's no closure here. It just keeps coming back at us. And then additionally, you might have a homicide that's very close to a homicide that was committed. And now all of a sudden, Angela's picture's in the paper again. Or you turn on the TV and there she is again. I think of like all the people who now have gone through Pan Am 103. What are they going through? This is all coming back for them now. They didn't ask for this. They're all like popped back into the spotlight and they're just trying to live their life. And how do you live your life? So it's a constant struggle to cope with this on a day-to-day basis. You know, you would like to just kind of hibernate and say, okay, but you can't. One of the things also that we fight for is the ability to do a lot of these things. The ability to stand up at sentencing and say, this is how he harmed my loved one. This is what it's done to me. And I help people prepare petitions on how to do that. I help them write their, it's called a victim's impact letter or statement. I teach them how to do that. I teach them what to write, how to explore the feelings that come up for them, and how to feel comfortable with standing in front of a judge and probably giving the biggest speech of their life. Because you're finally getting a chance to defend the character of your loved one, which has been completely devastated and washed out. Your loved one's been blamed for anything and everything that has ever happened. They are the cause of this murder. It was their fault. They shouldn't have been where they were. They shouldn't have dressed the way they did. It has nothing to do, of course, with the defendant. And what happens often is when the person has no defense is when they strike so violently against the victim. They have nothing left to grasp at.
Is this statement that they write, is that significant in the trial, or is it just, I mean, does the judge pay attention to that, or is it just a way for them to...
To vent. It's mostly to vent. What happens, though, is that when you send that statement, the statement goes, you send a copy of it to the judge, and you send a copy of it to the district attorney's office. Sometimes you can also send it to the detective, but for the first two, it's very important because it goes in their file, and it's part of their record, and that goes with them to prison. So when they come up for parole, all those letters from all the family members you gathered letters from go in that file, and they are recognized. But, as you said, often the sentence that the judge is going to impose is already solidified. It's either a deal between the district attorney and the defense attorney, or it's a deal that, you know, was cut right then and there. It wasn't cut beforehand without a trial. Now it's the end of the trial, and he decides, you know, I'm gonna turn and say guilty because he thinks that the jury's gonna come back. And so he'll give a guilty plea at the last minute. And they can accept that at the last minute. I have seen many circumstances where when they come for parole and people sign these petitions, what we've done is we've done petition drives where we've, at the beginning, at the top, we say, we recount the crime, and we have it's just lines that say name, date, you know, address, and signature. And we infiltrate offices and we say, you have to sign this. And we go around to everyone we know, and we just keep gathering all these signatures, and we copy them and send them up to the parole board. And we fight for the ability to go in front of the parole board and tell them how detrimental it would be if I had to see his face on the street ever again. But not all states recognize that yet. And we're still kind of fighting for it in New York. We've gotten, they're doing it on a pilot basis where certain counties are allowed to send their families. So our groups, they're becoming more recognized. As a matter of fact, victims' rights all of a sudden is like politically correct. Never was before. But now everybody thinks that this is a hot issue. So maybe we will get some exposure that we never had before.